I don't know. If there were somebody that drew their favorite tree every day, I'd tune into that. I'd watch them draw that tree. I'd watch them interact with that tree. I'd watch them tell stories about that tree. I kind of want to do that now. Hello, everybody. My name is Tyrone Elliott. My ancestral name is Tolhul, and I am your guest host today for Work in Progress. It's an exploratory gallery podcast where you'll hear from artists, staff, collaborators, and even different hosts as you follow along and listen to each episode. This episode is being recorded and will be produced on the Kwangan speaking people's territory, now known as the Esquimalt and Songhees Nations. In this episode, I will dive into some of the workshops that I did in the past fall with AGGV and UVic's Indigenous Education students. The school workshops are for grades 4 to 12 throughout the Greater Victoria area and are typically offered September through November. Over the past few months, I've worked with youth in the school districts around Victoria. I've been teaching them cedar weaving and generally what it means to be an artist. Personally, I didn't know I was an artist. I was not confident in my ability as an artist. I didn't even think that was something that I could be. I remember when I was a younger person, probably 12 or so, and I saw somebody who I didn't consider to be an artist, my dad. He had just done some doodles on some paper. And I was like, but that's what I see on the walls at the galleries. And this is just coming to my mind right now, but it's something that really formed how I came to understand myself as an artist. Because I would say my dad's an artist now, because my understanding of what it means to be an artist grew. I would say it has been a journey over the past 4 years where I recognize that, hey, I might be into this art thing. I've been weaving my entire life, but I didn't understand that as something that was understood tangibly in the art world, even though it absolutely should be. As I mentioned, I've been weaving since I was probably about 5. It may even be earlier, but that's my earliest memory. I was taught by my mother, Violet Elliott, how to weave, and by my father, Joe Elliott, how to harvest. Even though I started at the age of 5, I'd been around cedar pretty much my entire, at least the life that I remember. My mom started to learn to weave when I was about 1 or 2 from a Neutronoth artist, Julie Joseph. She taught her how to make, I believe it was a hat, I could be wrong, initially. And then my mom kind of took it from there and did her own kind of exploration with cedar weaving. By the time I was a little bit older, around 8 or 9, my mom was fairly established as a cedar weaving facilitator and was doing workshops around the island. I would always kind of be just there, probably on my Game Boy, honestly, playing Pokemon. But over time, those teachings that my mom had and the understanding of the cedar and the land-based relationship started to sink in. It was around 13 that I started to take in real interest in cedar weaving. It was sort of one of those aha moments where my mom was doing a cedar weaving workshop in Stamenis territory for a group of elders who were about to go on canoe journeys. And there was this hat that my mom was working on to demonstrate for the participants. And I sat down and looked at the hat. I think I was there for maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just looking at the hat in as deep detail as I could as a 13, 12-year-old. And eventually something clicked and I looked at my mom and I said, is it that easy? And it's not that easy. but it was something that I was able to break down into steps, and steps that were, even from that sort of novice level of weaving, that I was able to break down and explain very well. So kind of from that moment on, I was, at least when I was around a co-facilitator for my mom, I would go and help participants if they were struggling. And even though I wasn't actively weaving that much, I don't think I maybe made a basket or a hat once every year or two growing up. But my mom would always say, hey son, do you see what I did here? If she was stuck on a project or if she needed a second eyes on something, and that kind of troubleshooting, it's kind of interesting because I'm actually a lot, when it comes to my own practice, I find the more complicated projects a little bit easier when it comes to making a small basket, for example. I kind of tend to overthink it because I'm used to these complicated problems with complicated solutions, but that's also led to I'm an experimental weaver. Any facet of weaving that I can kind of try and explore and push the boundaries of, I do try to. I work a lot with natural dyes. I work a lot with different materials. I'm kind of like my mom in the sense that anytime I hear there's another indigenous peoples that are weavers, I listen in and I hear what they do with it and how they do it. It's simple, but it's complex, and it's something that really drives me. And if I had not had that moment when I was 12 or 13 of, oh, I can do this, I probably never would be where I am today. And so through these series of workshops with AGGV and with the school districts and with individual schools, I wanted to provide a platform for these young people to at least have an opportunity to find that same aha moment. I do believe that everybody is an artist in some way, and some of the discussions we had with the students was about, you know, is boxing an art? And is it an art the way that I do math? And yes, it is. And you do it differently than everybody else. You find your own methods, you experiment, and talking is an art. Being able to sit down and talk right now is something that I haven't meant to, but I've honed it. And so for there to be an opportunity, and I use weaving as kind of my catalyst because that's what I know. But before we get into the weaving, I sat down and I listened to the students about what it means to be an artist and who is an artist and are they an artist? And I was actually very surprised because there's been a definite shift in what's considered art. Because when I asked, are you an artist? There were definitely classes where there were fewer people, but there were a lot of young people that put up their hands, and it was really cool to see. It was very interesting. A conversation I've had with a coworker of mine is at what age, when someone shows us something that they did, do we not put on the voice and go, oh, that's awesome? At what age do we stop giving that leeway of trying is enough? And I don't have an answer for it, but I don't think that should ever stop. I'm proud of myself when I try something new. I'm proud of that same friend when he tries something new. And after completing these workshops, I do have a lot of hope. There are a lot of young artists out there who know that they're artists, and that's not something that I had. It's something that I've cultivated for myself, but it took a lot of effort and it took a lot of energy, and hopeful is the right word. So I learned to harvest from my dad. And I mean, I learned from both my parents, but my dad was the one who did most of the harvesting. And it's a community event. It's a family event. We go out as a group. It's usually any combination of my parents, my grandma, my partner. Growing up, we usually had different smatterings of cousins, uncles, random community members, sometimes people that were wanting to learn. My partner, who's doing their PhD, talks about visiting as a concept and visiting as a way of making law, a way of governance. And it's in those moments where we are at one with the lands we're on and where we're at complete ease that we are able to make those big decisions. That, in my opinion, it's a gift. Not only when we're harvesting are we receiving bark from the cedar to make clothes, to make baskets, to make jewelry, to make any number of things. The way I was taught is that the cedar tree is giving a piece of itself, and that's not just the tangible, it's the spiritual. We've had a relationship with the cedar tree for tens of thousands of years. And that's not something that I take lightly. It's not something I was taught to take lightly. And so when we're harvesting and we're receiving that gift, it's not something that you can just take. It's something that you have to reciprocate. The way that I choose to do that is by educating. Those young people, they're sponges. It's said a lot, but they really are. And they already know these things. Intrinsically, I think we do know these things, but the way that the world is structured, the systems that we live in, they kind of do their best to tear us away from it. And these young people, usually they were 7, I think would be the average age of them. They haven't unlearned that yet. And so I asked them, what do you know about trees? Well, my favorite tree, and it's the one in their neighborhood. They have a best tree friend. And again, I ask, when does that stop? And again, ideally, never. I do have a best tree friend. In my own territory, Cowichan, there's this tree that we would go to when we would go camping. And when we went camping, it was a pretty big thing. There would usually be at least 6 or 7 of us. And then sometimes people would just come up for the day. But sometimes there would be 15 of us, 20 of us. And there was this one super old tree where I think that particular day there were 11 of us. We all held hands and we hugged the tree and we didn't reach each other. And that's my favorite tree. It's a cedar tree. I think about that place often. And when I think of my practice, when I think of what I need to reciprocate and what I try to impart on others, and especially young people, is that tree has been there for maybe actually 1,000 years. That's not something that you can replace. And that's something that needs to be cared for. And that's something that requires thought and kinship. But they know that. My job's, it's not done when I go there, but I don't have to do much to convince them. The way that I facilitate, it's almost a little bit of a cliche to say, I learn as much from them as they do from me, but I really do, even though I talk about the systems and the structures that are in the way of this connection. I exist within those. I have, as much as I try not to, I have forgotten things. I have lost things that they haven't, that they remind me of. When I said that after those workshops, I felt hopeful, that's because there was that renewed sense of understanding. When I am in conversation with those students, I really do want to hear what they have to say. I want to hear what they have to contribute to the conversation, and I want to hear their experiences. They have a lot to add, and I don't think it's done enough. I mean, especially in a school setting, I think it's very different for them to be listened to and heard in that way, and for their knowledge to be reverberated. I had a great time with those workshops because I was able to do that, and because I heard weeks afterwards that the students would talk about it. I would, because I work with the school district, I would go to those schools later on and the kids would remember and they'd say, I still have my bracelet. I remember one instance where I was walking to my car after, and the students were chasing after me and they were all holding up their wrists and they were showing me their bracelets, and it was really cute because I was like, I know, I helped you make those. But I don't know, if I was a young person in school and I received that kind of learning, I don't know how different that would be. There's potential there. There's room for a shift in the way that we interact with young people. Kids are really not afraid to just ask questions. The restructuring of the understanding around the totem pole, which, if you're not aware, the term totem comes from what I believe is an Anishinaabeg word, totem. And I don't know enough about that to comment about what the actual spiritual aspect of it or anything. But what I do understand is settler colonizers that were moving west, they kind of misattributed the concept of totem onto our poles. Because the one thing I do know about totem is it has to do with kind of an animal that you're attuned to. There's a lot more to it than that. Please don't I'm just saying what I do know. But the polls that they were seeing, they kind of attributed that to be the same thing. And so a student asked me, what about totem poles? And that gave me an opportunity to give them a little bit of that history. I also had the opportunity to talk about cedar bark weaving and colonialism's impact on weaving, and how pre-contact that a lot of the weaving was actually done with cedar root, because we had a method to weave cedar root that was watertight and largely heatproof. Not as many people weave with cedar root as weave with cedar bark. And the reason for that is essentially, I think I would call it survival capitalism. Weaving with cedar bark is faster. And while we weren't allowed to practice our spiritual or ceremonial pieces of culture, we were allowed to if it was for monetary gain. And so there's more history to it with regard to the world wars and people being forced to go to war that were masculine presenting, and the feminine presenting people being left behind. They were then needing to feed their families and feed their community. And one way to make a very small amount of money was weaving baskets. And it was faster to do that weaving with bark than root. So that's one way that colonialism has changed the practice of cedar weaving. There are definitely still people that do cedar root weaving, and they're amazing. They're really awesome, and I really admire them. I mean, all weaving is very time-consuming, but cedar root weaving especially. I find it really interesting when people say that they're weaving in a concept into something, because I really do feel like that's what I do when I facilitate these workshops. Like, you're not leaving with just a bracelet, which is what we did during the workshops. We made bracelets. But you're leaving with all of, I mean, as much as I can condense into 45 minutes, my lifetime of understanding that reciprocal relationship with cedar and the lands that I know into bracelet. It's interwoven into a tangible thing, and I think that's really cool. Thank you so much for joining me. A big thank you to the UVic students in Carmen's class who co-facilitated the workshops with me. A big thank you to AGGV and Jen for putting on the workshops. If you'd like to follow me, I go by Unseated Creations. I sell stuff locally in shops, at markets, and for more information, visit AGGV.ca.